I say to be a doctor, you have to be two qualities that's essential for a doctor, among others, is scepticism and humility. Humility you don't see much of that in doctors. Neither scepticism. I realise looking back as a doctor, surgeon as I call myself, looking back, that so many of my colleagues were pond skaters. They were suspended on surface tension, preyed upon, praying, some of them charlatans, and they're on the surface, they didn't look down, and that's why they took up operations that had sketchy experience attached to them. I'll give you an example. There was a rather smart aleck chap up in Oxford, used to talk a lot at meetings. He said at that point there were 700 different knee replacements worldwide. Hardly any of them had undergone proper clinical trials. And I wrote years and years ago saying that since the NHS was paying for all this, that any new design should be confined to the hospital of the designer and one or two other hospitals and then looked at for the next 10 years. So you probably heard about there was something called gold. I think it actually was gold-coloured. They were putting him in Dereford Hospital, just down the way, the biggest hospital in the country. The satanic mill, as I call it, with a big chimney. Always imagine limbs going in there for incineration. And that hospital, they did a whole series of this particular operation, and they all had to be revised. All had to be revised.
Well, this is regulators, isn't it? It reminds me very much of the breast implants, which were recommended by the MHRA, the same people that signed off these COVID jabs, and then proved to be a total disaster from the very start. But look, one question that's come up post the pandemic, David, has got to be, how can you tell the difference between a doctor who's become a doctor because they feel a calling to do that job and somebody that's just read, as, say, for example, solicitors do, that this is a good profession to make a lot of money in?
I think a majority of younger doctors now, especially in general practice, think that the service owes them a living. And a big factor, which I just realised, someone told me this, my dear gardening friend Joe, the fact is this, that they have to pay for education now. My education at the Shaftesbury Grammar School as a boarder, Mum and Dad paid £3 a week for my boarding. My education was free. The masters, some of them who'd been in the war, but they were all principled men, decent men with decent wives. Two of the young masters used to take us out on the Sunday for these long walks round that wonderful North Dorset landscapes. But they would do without. They'd have to skip tea with their families, their little ones, to take the boarders out. There were 90 of us. So my education was free. I went to medical school on a county major award. My parents were worried stiff that I was going to be a doctor when I first announced it at the age of 12, having read Schweitzer. But when it came to it, it cost nothing because I was educated by the state. When I add that as a footnote in articles I write, and I've written many, if you look on the website, David Halpin Surgeons there, then you'll find that the editors always excise that, interestingly, but I usually say educated by the state. But it's different now, you see, for the last, since Blair, wasn't it, the university tuition fees? It now costs something like, I'd imagine, something like £150,000 in medical fees. So they feel that they are entitled. That's the word, entitlement. So
it's a bit of a trade, isn't it? So the idea is you pay for this particular type of education, which is for a profession, and you're hoping to make X times the amount of money you've paid in the profession. Well, I mean, it's getting people to think around the values of finance rather than the values of human life.
Well, you know, Tony, I've said it often that when I qualified at St. Mary's in 1964, money was not in my mind at all. I said it before on interviews with someone. But, you know, I was earning £43 a month after tax, and that paid for our flat, because I married when I was just finished, when I just started clinical studies 3 years before. Married Sue, my first love, who I fell in love with in 1959. We married in 61. We had a little flat that Dad actually organised for me, and he found it for us in Kew. Good flat, near the river, lovely. And then we adopted Andrew then later on. But when I qualified in 64, money was not in my mind. When I went to the Massachusetts General in 1973 on a so-called research 6 months, Dean Cartledge research, I was sent there because there was a snag. They changed our contracts. They were no longer until you got a consultant job. It was time limited. A colleague who died of a brain tumour about 10 years ago now, went, no names, no pack drill, he was given an extension on his contract as senior registrar for 6 months. Do you know what help he got? 1 month. And my mentor, Robin Ling, who designed a hip which is now used in a third of all cases worldwide because it has the benefit of a tapered stem in the femur, designed it with Clive Lee, he died last year, an engineer at the University of Exeter. Robin did his best to get me employed, and he, with a Jewish chap called Klenneman at Northwick Park, he'd set up a fellowship with the Massachusetts General, Professor Mankin, in fact a New York Jew, inverted commas Jew. I'm not anti-Jewish, I'm pro-human. And I'm a universalist. I keep saying that.
Well, actually, you talking about the Jews, I don't really let you finish your story, but there has been a momentous death last week of this guy, Vladimir Zelenko, which I imagine you've come across.
Well, I know. He
called it the poison death jab.
I know. He's, you know, typically Jewish. He's got a long beard. He looks like a rabbi.
He's a practicing Orthodox Jew.
Yes, I know. But he's, in fact, a proper human. And I cleave to proper humans, so I don't look at the label. I don't look at the sausage, not at the skin. That's in me because my dad, he didn't like seeing underdogs kicked around. He made his own mind up. You know, sometimes wrongly, we get it wrong sometimes. And I'm digressing. What is happening now? They're paying for education, and I think they're being profiled as well. I understand that they profile police. Some of them get in, so I've met some very decent policemen. Two of them said, when I told them about the Kelly story, there's a good story attaching to that, the second one, they said, good on you, all the best. The police know it was dirty, the uniform branch, they know that. We're getting around that in a minute. But they profile the police to get the right amount of aggression, lack of scepticism perhaps, which I say is necessary for a doctor, not aggression, not that ability to look at things with a balance. There are retired policemen in this parish. I meet some of them in the pub, or used to. The pub's, in fact, a bit dicky at the moment. But they're decent men. One of them was in Manchester or Liverpool. And I know that they would have listened to people. There's a chap who's just now living now about a quarter of a mile away. He was the explosives officer for the Met. He worked for them for 33 years. He had a sniffer dog. He had to go into the House of Commons and House of Lords twice a week to look for bombs, to look for explosives. He said to me, the House of Commons, he said, they treated us like dirt. He said they were a different bunch. House of Lords, they were people. They were different.
Well, apparently the House of Lords are the people we're supposed to be getting rid of because they're so undemocratic, although the thing is they are often the people that are pulling in some of the worst laws that have been brought in the coalition government and the Conservative governments to revise them. And the only people who actually seem to be looking after our interests are the Lords rather than the Commons. But anyway, look, I know what you want to talk a little bit about some of the revelations that have been over the last few weeks to do with the plandemic, whatever you want to call it. And some of the side effects, particularly of these jabs. Now, the very most important thing you can say about the injections is that they haven't actually finished the proper clinical trials. They finish next year in 2023. So we've been being injected with something which has not been properly trialled. But anyway, what do you make of some of the results of what have been proven to be some of the side effects? And another caveat to that is that the side effects themselves, quite a lot of the time, haven't actually been registered in any official way.
Well, Tony, just first of all, I'm not anti-vax. Good example I always give is tetanus toxoid. Tetanus, lockjaw, was a killer disease, terrible condition. And I saw it when I was working in Bristol as an SHO at the Ham Green Hospital. There was a special unit there. I might have mentioned this before. There was a physician who was very skilled looking after them. They had to put on ventilators when they came in bad. There was a GP in Dacombe, near Torquay here, a very good GP, and he used to insist that everyone got the tetanus toxoid, because lots of horses in that valley, a deep valley near Torquay, and tetanus was almost endemic. The spores of tetanus, of Clostridium tetanus, was in the soil, and that doctor knew that. GP, proper GP, family doctor. Now, I'm not anti-vax. I smelt a rat right at the start of the COVID lies. I smelt a rat, as I do, being a sceptic. I knew it was bullshit. And I'd done my best to advise people, including my family, that the vaccination was unnecessary, the masks as used were filthy. As a surgeon, if I touched my mask once during an operation, I always used a mask, because I had to talk to the nurses for instrument. And when you talk, tiny, small amounts of your saliva can leave your mouth and light on the wound. And your mouth is dirty. Streptococci was an example. And so almost every wound would be infected if I didn't wear a mask. And infecting a total hip replacement, where you're putting an acrylic cement into all the cancellous spaces of the bone, you've got an acre of surface area. It's an ideal environment for bacteria. An infected hip replacement, you can, in fact, I used to do this, not my own cases mostly, but I could revise them successfully, but it was a long haul. But it, generally speaking, it was disastrous. So punctilious surgery, being kind to the tissues, being absolutely certain about asepsis, was vital for that particular thing. Now, so masks are necessary. I didn't wear a mask at all. I did not do any social distancing. I went on as normal, went on down to my woods, and my excuse would be if I was stopped, I was tailed by a copper once in the car, my way round Newton Abbott on what they call a clay pit road. I thought, is he after me? They got Newton number plate recognition. I thought, well, if he stops me, I'm going down to check the fences because there are sheep there in my wood pasture. It's a proper agricultural reason. I could deal with them anyway. I can deal with policemen. Quite easy. Because they know that I am a straightforward, retired doctor surgeon. I know the ropes. And I know the whole thing was nonsense. I saw a film of a riot squad virtually going into a basement place in Torquay and arresting a young man at a party. It was fascist Germany. It was fascist Germany. Can't believe it.
Wasn't just one man on his own, was it?
One man. Well, I think he had a partner inside, actually, like the people who started the Freedom Alliance. You know, the auntie who started that, two people up in Glasgow, had drinks with a couple next door. Next thing, they had a police raid from Glasgow Coppers, another fascist lot.
But anyway, nowadays, what we're getting is some statistics, aren't we, about...
Yes, we have. Well, all the time I've been looking at it, I've been writing, if you look on my website, which you can get up, Halpin, H-A-L-P-I-N, surgeon, put in COVID, you get 52 articles. There are two interviews by Tony Gosling, who's interviewing me now, and is part of an interview, I think, that I came across the other day. I don't have time always to review these things, but I've been absolutely explicit. And the local paper, the Mid-Devon Advertiser, sub-editor Patrick Beasley, editor Nick Knight, who I've met and liked. He goes hill-walking to get away from newspapers. They published my articles. They didn't publish one where I used the word fascist. That was the seventh article. Not sure whether that veered off. I don't know, but I used it. We are dealing with fascism, Tony, and this COVID thing is a vehicle. You remember the last interview you said to me, what's it all about, David? I said, Tony, it's about global serfdom. And that's in a nutshell what it is. I've looked at all the side effects. I've been going on to the MHRA website, adverse responses. It's got lots of ragbag things, diagnoses that are relevant, you know, ingrowing toenail or something. But it's got also the meat. And, of course, it's underreported because it's using a yellow card system, which is, as they say, passive. people have to react to it by filling in a form, either the doctor or the patient. The patients aren't even told about the yellow peril. When you line up, which is in fact grotesque negligence, in fact it will turn out to be gross negligence manslaughter, whatever they call it, that trite phrase, gross, yes, that's what I think they call it, that's a nice legal term. What the people dying of this, these jabs, whatever, the RNA vaccine certainly, also AstraZeneca, not an RNA vaccine, but another, what I know, it's all what I call toxic junk. And I've called it that almost from the word go.
It's easy to throw accusations, but what about the statistics?
Well, the statistics are terrible. I know a lot about a condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome. Another name is transverse myelitis. You'd see it sporadically. I've seen it following vaccination or other vaccinations. I didn't treat it, but I know about it. It's a very important condition. I always liked neurology, the study of the nerves. I was rather good at it. I'm quite a good physician, I can tell you that. So I know about these things. But what happens, people find suddenly that they've got pins and needles, numbness in their legs, and they won't work. And it will affect various levels of their spinal cord. If it goes up above T3, which is in fact below that, this works your chest muscles and allows your chest to expand and to breathe, then you have to be ventilated. And some of them will have been ventilated. When I last looked, it's now, as you know, AstraZeneca has withdrawn eventually because they found it was causing cerebral thrombosis in several nations in the racket called the EU, and it was happening here as well, but they were concealing it. I've corresponded with the Oxford Vaccine Group, Professor Pollard, who produced this toxic junk within about 6 months of getting the idea, probably from Ferguson in a taxi. He said he had his, you know, it was a light bulb moment, you know, quite extraordinary. I am digressing. There's a hell of a lot to say about it. But the fact is this, that any vaccine, and not vaccines, the RNA vaccines, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, I think, Moderna, you know the Moderna, where the name comes from? It's very interesting. Moderna, the last three letters are RNA. That's why it's called Moderna. But that inserts the string of genes into the somatic chromosomes, and in fact the germinal centres, you know, testes and ovaries, the one, not the somatic ones. I forget the other term, somatic, and forgot that. But it inserts these genes. Normally a vaccine of the proper sort, and in fact tetanus toxin is not a typical vaccine, but they're tested over years. Well, first of all, on rats, then on primates, then on humans, on a closed population. I can talk about that too, because there's a young doctor I wrote about 50 years ago about the yellow card system to a damn fellow called Herxheimer. He used to produce a thing every month called something pharmacology. I used to read it. It was sent around as a freebie. I can talk about it later on, actually. It's a very important point, actually, I'm making about that. But the MHRA thing, which was gathered by AI, they knew they'd get so many side effects. They didn't record it themselves. This is Dr. Rain, R-A-I-N-E, a clear psychopath. She doesn't respond to letters from concerned colleagues of mine telling them about it and saying you should not vaccinate children. She doesn't even reply to these doctors. It is beyond belief, Tony. It is beyond belief. Any vaccine should be studied over years. Most of them come onto the market after about 10 years. They go through primary trials, secondary trials, and tertiary trials. These have had no tertiary trials. The Pfizer second phase trials have been, they've had side effects they've concealed, as you know, what's it called now? Well, partly Robert Kennedy's organization, Defense for Children, and two other organizations. Just forget the fellow's name out. He's a journalist, essentially. He's really full on board with this.
Del Bigtree, is it?
Well, yeah, Del Bigtree. But there's, in fact, an Israeli lawyer called Siri, S-I-R-A, who's been absolutely he's been central in fight getting the using the law to get the documents out of Pfizer. Do you know that Pfizer only agreed to release 25,000 documents relating to the side effects and the rest of it, the trials, over 75 by 2075. So Haringer can't have that. So they've been releasing them more quickly. And they revealed that the side effects from in the second phase trials were disastrous. It is, in fact, intended. It is a eugenic purpose. No question about that. No question at all about that. It's a purpose to, and it's a secondary thing, secondary aims as well. In this country, it's designed to overwhelm the health service. And the health service is being overwhelmed now by people who are getting COVID, inverted commas, and it is a disease, no question about that. I don't agree with the colleague who say there's no virus. It is an illness, and it's specific. You lose your sense of taste with some variants of flu, influenza. But there's something else about it. The remarkable fatigue that people have, they can't get off the chair, they say. And it lasts for quite a long time as well. It is a disease, no question. But the people getting COVID now have been vaccinated. And all around this parish, I keep hearing about, oh, she's got COVID. They've all been vaccinated. I'm one swallow making a summer. I wouldn't, of course, touch the junk. And I've just taken taken vitamin D, which I was deficient in. They found at the Hammersmith 2 years ago and I had tertiary opinion there. I've taken zinc for the last year. I'm not saying that's the magic bullet. I was ill a year ago with shingles in four spinal segments. L4, L5, S1 in my right leg, L4 in my left leg. And a week later, I had a cellulitis in my right leg. As my immunity was depressed, presumably by this overwhelming, had a viremia. I didn't have normally shingles starts in one segment because the virus is sitting in what your anterior horn cells, just by your spinal cord, it's sitting there for years, and then perhaps off you go, off you go, off you go, Tolly, sitting in your spinal cord, and you then people get a say girdle distribution or in the leg or whatever, even the arm. Or in the eye, terribly, actually. Herpes zoster ophthalmicus can be a dreadful thing for the eye. But in my case, I had a viremia. I felt I was feverish. I had mild delusion. One night I thought my dear friend, late friend, Burns Cox, physician, came into the bedroom. I had very mild encephalitis that night. I know these things. And then I developed cellulitis a week later in my right leg, based on a wound from a rotten operation 45 years ago at Torbay Hospital, well, in Newton Abbott Hospital, actually. And that caused the cellulitis. I had oral antibiotics from my GP. He helped me. He agreed with my diagnosis, a little bit resistant to start with. But
I think actually you visiting your GP could be quite a formidable experience.
Well, they say to me, David, you might know more than your GP, and they must find it difficult. I said, well, maybe. But anyway, I said I needed intravenous antibiotics. I had to wait 19 hours on 111 over a weekend. I think it was Bank Holiday weekend on a Monday. I had an apology for they're under pressure at 3 hours, say we haven't come back to you yet with a doctor to speak to you. At 19 hours, knowing I had to have intravenous flucoxacillin, which I was taking orally, had to be in the RD&E 20 miles from here, I phoned 111, I phoned 999. I said, I want to go to RD&E, please. I was quite courteous, although I was a bit ill. The leg was getting worse, and I actually feared for my leg. The thing called necrotizing fasciitis, it might have been the lead result of that. So I phoned at 7 o'clock in the morning, 7:30, 999. I had a paramedic answer me from Torbay, lady, wasn't very courteous. She couldn't take me to Torquay because she couldn't take me to RD&E because Torbay was the place I should go to, but she could provide a taxi to RD&E. So I sat in my dressing gown at 8 o'clock in the morning on the pile of timber we just milled, with my shaving kit and a stick, because I couldn't put weight on my right leg. And a taxi arrived from Exeter. The Apple taxis took me there, nice chap, quite a few Palestinians I met in that thing. And I waited 2 hours in the A&E department. And actually, I was admitted. And the nicest thing, the consultant up at Exeter, the A&E, very pleasant. He didn't know very much. I knew that. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was wheeled up in a trolley to Lohmann Ward, named after a physician, I think. And a senior nurse, an auxiliary nurse, Romanian actually, looked down on me and said, "David, welcome to Lohmann Ward. We're going to look after you." Almost crying now. That's the essence of medicine, Tony. Caring for the other. Caring for your neighbour. Love thy neighbour. You know that, don't you, as a Christian?
I certainly do. Look,
it was mosaic, of course.
Getting back to the side effects of the jabs, I know there's been, for example, in the US, quite a lot of physicians are now looking at an explosion, is not too mild a word to use, for the increase in some of the syndromes that they're seeing in the US, yes, and most probably here too, yep, now. So can you just take us through some of those? Now we're, 18 months after the rollout of jabs, it's becoming clear that certain areas of medicine are seeing a massive increase in casualties.
There's no question that right from the word go, there have been the most dramatic side effects, including death. Death. Thousands and thousands of deaths. That's the fact of it. They've been concealed by the social media platforms. The censorship has been draconian. Right at the start, people with a bit of brain, and I say like myself, but people who were expert virologists, epidemiologists, Witkowski comes to mind, epidemiologist, one time working for the Rockefeller Foundation, is extraordinary, but a decent German-trained Professor Nutt Witkowski, a Professor John Ioannidis, who is at Stanhope University. His expertise is particular. He looks at medical papers for flaws, and he finds flaws in so many. And I'd agree with him, because I've been on editorial board. A lot of papers are flawed. They're biased for all sorts of reasons, and it doesn't come out. The side effects have been dramatic. They've been concealed in this country in particular, but in America, which is a freer society with a better law system, to be blunt about it, it has come out quite early. The classic case is Dr. Simone Gold. She is now in prison. She's in prison because she spoke out about the advantages of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and they took her off. She was at two hospitals in Los Angeles. They withdrew her license, I think, eventually, but she was removed from two hospitals by fascist diktat. Simon was part of a group of doctors who stood outside of the Supreme Court early in last year, in 2021. She spoke very well. I noticed the name Gold. I imagine that she has some Jewish, inverted commas, genes inside her, but she's a wonderful doctor. She's an honest person.
That was the American frontline doctors, and I would suggest one of the reasons why she may be in jail has nothing to do with what she's saying medically. It's just the fact that she's got a tremendous amount of charisma, and she's extremely good at explaining. In fact, I've noticed that some of her statements on social media have gone into the tens, hundreds of thousands, even millions of views.
She's also a trained advocate. Did you know that? She's a lawyer. She did law after she qualified in medicine. And the reason why she's been imprisoned by a judge, I forget his name actually now, but an awfully biased judgment, is because she was in that demonstration when they invaded the White House. And she was arrested then, in fact. She was arrested her name was taken, I think, but they opened the gates deliberately to let people in, apparently. There was a melee inside, with, I imagine, some incited violence. You know, you know how they can do this in these big demonstrations in this country. We know all about that. You know, agent provocateurs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, agent provocateurs.
An elite term. And she was, I think, questioned there by the FBI, I think. I'm trying to remember what happened to her.
Anyway, look, this is a bit of a distraction, really, because what I want to get you to talk about is
they burst the front door open.
Yes, well, specifically, what is the evidence? So, for example, there is there are allegations that the something within these mysterious mRNA jabs can target the reproductive system.
Yes. Well, the Japanese have found that the spike protein, which is excited by this toxic junk, the spike protein concentrates in the ovary. And relevant to that is a man who is on Global Research Today, Dr. Ryan Cole, who's been independent pathologist for some years. He's not dependent on any damned hospital for his salary, so he speaks his mind. He said about 6 months ago he saw ovarian cancer increasing in his practice, quite a wide area, in Iowa or somewhere like that. It was increasing by 20 times. And it's a bloody awful cancer, ovarian cancer. It's often not detected very early. And it has quite a high mortality rate. I'm not sure what cell type it is. But he's now come out to say that all cancers are going up. And you know why, Tony? Because they've found that this toxic junk depresses T cell function. All of us have little cancers forming all the time. We have an immune system which has been developed over eons of time, along with our mammalian cousins. And that has allowed us to defeat cancers, mutations inside us, as we grow up and get older. As we get older, there's more of them. But quite often, they're quenched by this, by T cells and by B cells, I think, as well. I don't know all the detail about this, but it's certainly been shown very early on that they were depressing T cell function. Now, I can bet your bottom dollar that the people in these laboratories, including those laboratories funded by the Americans in Ukraine, they say there were 30 of them. It's been confirmed by Newland that they were funding them. No question about that. That's not fake news. That's real. But in laboratories all over the world, they had some in Georgia, I noticed, as well. No doubt they got some in Israel. I'm sure of that. But I bet they tried that.
Maybe some in Wiltshire too, near Salisbury.
You mean in Porton Down? I can search Porton Down on my website. There's some stuff there of interest. But they would have tried it on primates. I'm sure of that, quite quickly. And I bet they showed T cell function depression then.
What about the possibility that maybe that the one of the side effects of these new, really untested COVID vaccines, they call them the jabs, may actually be generally injuring cell health? So it's quite important that cells, you know, are able to just carry on and do their thing until they get to the end of their life cycle. New cells are created through cell division. Is there any evidence at all that maybe that's affected by them?
You might call it anecdotal, but I have a very observant, wonderful friend called Jo Clark Irons in Torquay. She gardens professionally. She has about 7 or 8 customers. So she sees people close up, all who've been obedient and have done what Mr. Johnson and Mr. Professor Whitty have told them to do, and Valance with his shares in Smith Kline French. They've done that, and she's noticed that they have been aging quickly. There's the cellular mechanism is called apoptosis, APOPTOSIS, that is cell death. When you examine cells under a microscope, you can see dead cells because the nuclei become dark. They die. Some cells turn over rapidly, like skin cells, things like chondrocytes make our cartilage, the stuff within the cartilage. I can go into that, know a lot about that. But they're much slower. But I think that apoptosis has been speeded up by the toxic junk. That's just a feeling I have. Just as I have another feeling. This is digression, Tony, but it's very important. If you want to get a bioweapon, when you want to have your enemy hamstrung, you do what they did in around 2011 in Gaza. You shot 12-year-old boys in the groin or knee. They weren't killed by it. There's over 22. They're on a paper of mine called The Methodical Shooting of Children. If you just put in methodical, up this paper comes. The BMJ and the Lancet wouldn't print it. But I said it was an epidemic at the time, or at least a small outbreak, due to the elemental evil where an Israeli member of the Israeli occupation force, uses his sniper rifle, with parts produced in Britain, to shoot a dear child who's scrabbling for concrete fragments near Erez checkpoint, where they've been bombing, so that they can make some stuff for concrete, for rebuilding the houses they've been bombed. They were earning a few shekels a day with their donkeys and carts, and they were being shot from the watchtowers along the so-called border with Gaza. I'm digressing from that, but I'm talking about elemental evil. Elemental evil. It's all round us, Tony, but we are winning, because out of this terrible, this global administration of this toxic junk, there's a lot of death and injury. People's brains are being affected. I know certain of that. I see it in my own family. I see rather rapid aging. Some of the loss of memory may be aging itself, but I think it's been speeded up by this damn stuff. I'm sure of it. I was going to say this. Alzheimer's disease now affects 800,000 people in this country. They're projecting that by the year 2030, there'll be 1.3 million. If you want to hamstring your enemy, then you shoot a child in the groin. So you need four doctors looking after him. Or soldiers, you shoot them in the leg. If you want to get a bioweapon, which involves millions and millions of carers and millions of pounds in paying for those carers, then you affect their brains. I cannot prove it. I've yet to see the evidence. But I question whether Alzheimer's has been introduced in one of the flu vaccines, or several of them.
Well, one of the things I always recommend in order to stave off any chance of getting Alzheimer's, because Dr. Chris Exley at Keele University was basically sacked for his investigations into the use of aluminium in society, is that he's made it absolutely clear that if you've got a silica in mineral water, this is a really good way of helping your body, because your body can't do the job without the silica, to get rid of aluminium from your all parts of your body, including your brain. You can do that by buying Volvic water, which I think one of the only supermarkets you can get it from is Waitrose. So it may be because it's quite an expensive supermarket, and the people tend to sort of push trolleys at you quite a lot in Waitrose. I've noticed they're quite forceful. It's not the most pleasant place to shop. But anyway, go in there and get yourself some Volvic mineral water in order to drink, you know, as much as you can of that to help you in your older years staving off Alzheimer's. Because Chris Exley proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that aluminium plays a great part in this, and that it's out there in the environment, and he was basically sacked for his trouble. His big mistake, or actually it was very brave of him, was to begin looking into the effects of aluminium, which is in vaccines. So, you know, people don't necessarily realise.
Thiomersal. No, I know. Well, some of that work I've looked at of his, I'd like to discuss it, shall we say that. But I know of him. He is a courageous man. I've seen one or two videos, but I also sent a bit of money, I think, early on, because a very good friend of mine, who's now not very well, Janet Menage, she knew Chris Exley, so she primed me about that. All the stuff that flows into me on my own computer and by a telephone comes in, and Chris Exley was prominent in that. So I've written to him, and his website now corresponds with me. Do you see?
Well, look, just winding up our discussion on these medical matters, COVID-related. This is not quite so COVID-related. And I know there's been a lot of controversy about the use of statins. These are becoming something that elderly people are taking daily now. And there's been probably in 2019, 2020, mostly in the health pages of the Daily Mail, a lot of controversy about whether statins are actually doing people more harm than good, what their psychological effects might be at taking them long term. Where do you stand on this?
My own GP tried to wanted me to take statins about 10 years ago. I could tell you the story there. I refused to have them. I said I'd just, in fact, trim my weight a bit, go on doing my manual work in my woods, and I had a largely vegetarian diet, although this, you can talk about that as well, about fats. So I said, no, thank you very much, doctor. Went back a year later for my blood tests, and they found it was now below this magic threshold. You see, even that's junk.
This is cholesterol we're talking about.
Yes, I know. But you see, when do you take the blood test for a start? And whenever you're looking at anything scientifically, you don't take just one. You take, in fact, series for the day. You take controls, all sorts of things. It's junk medicine. Junk medicine. He said to me, "You've taken yourself in hand, David." I thought, hang, a year ago, you wanted me to take a ruddy pill. My brother, Michael, had written to you today. He was on statins. He has a coronary disease. He's had a bypass, actually, about 15 years ago, and he was given statins. He was getting pain in his legs. I said, "I think you ought to go to your doctor, Michael." And they changed it to some other statin, and the pain went, apparently. But there can be a risk of that. It can go on to a thing called rhabdomyolysis, where the red muscle cells break up, the myoglobin goes into your blood, into your circulation, and that, in fact, can kill the kidneys. It's the cause of death. And I bet some old people are dying at home, having been on statins. They're dying at home. They won't have post-mortems anyway. They might have missed a post-mortem. So sometimes people are having an earlier death on a drug which is not benefiting them at all.
We're told that it's supposed to reduce your cholesterol. Is that a good thing?
Well, I don't know about that. That's been questioned as well. There's a book on my shelf, I haven't read it yet, by a doctor in America saying this is all a bloody nonsense. It probably is. But I did hear the other day that in America, the prescription of statins has been stopped in something like half the states in America. Over here, do you know there's a reward for it? Do you know that? There's a bounty given, I'm told, to the practice for prescribing statins. Did you know that? Just as they were given bounties to the hospital for recording deaths by COVID. There's a case, I'll tell you this quickly, Tony. The interview's gone on. A young lady at Torbay, told my friend Joe on Christmas Eve of 2020 that a car had rolled over on the shore road by Livermead House Hotel. The traffic was blocked for several hours. The driver had had a jab at the English Riviera Centre a little while before. That was never reported in the print or broadcast media. That's one thing she told this Joe over a coffee outside in some shop. There was distancing then, I think. I can't remember that. The next thing she said was this. Listen to this, Tony. Their grandfather had died in Torbay Hospital of a ruptured aortic aneurysm. That is a painful and dramatic death. I've seen it. I've dealt with it as a young doctor when I was doing young surgeon. Not operated on it, but I've seen it and dealt with it. Seen it quite a few times. It's a dramatic and painful death. The family were angry because on the death certificate, aside from the aortic aneurysm, they had COVID. The lying has been almost universal. The hospitals are getting a bounty for that, I am told. I'm not sure whether the evidence is there. I'm told that. Just as doctors elsewhere were getting bounties for putting COVID on death certificate. And this is unlawful. And those doctors should be brought to court to write an untruthful diagnosis. A lie on the death certificate is against the law.
Now, I say finally, but it's Putin, isn't it, that accuses the West of being an empire of lies?
Yes, exactly right. It is an empire of lies. We have, America has been a fascist association since about 47, absorbing all the Nazi, a lot of the Nazi war from like von Braun. And I've just been reading an excellent chapter by Peter Williams in his book, Being There, on the Japanese war criminals. They were all absorbed into, some were absorbed into America. Their war crimes were erased, so to speak, but a hell of a lot of them went on to take very key positions in Japanese medicine. You could not make it up. They've been experimenting on people in Manchuria in the 30s. I knew about Maruta. It was, in fact, in the Sunday Times before it was Murdochized. Maruta meant blocks of wood. They treated these Chinese and Manchurians and Koreans, and I think Russians, actually, as lumps of wood. And some of them were frozen to death, frozen until they were lumps of wood.
Well, I mean, it might sound dramatic to talk about fascism now, but, I mean, there just certainly seems to be human experimentation has been going on over the last few years.
Yes, but I think this country has been fascist for years as well. I say so too. Say that, and I have to remember my definition. That is, you have to have an overweening state where control is almost absolute, as it is now here in this country. And what happens then is that the drive to self-preservation becomes dominant. You have no freedoms. I found a piece of paper from a meeting last night. I'm very bad at remembering my own quotes. But the thing is that what happens is the soul dies, and the main instinct then rises up, which is self-preservation. That's what they want. But, Tony, I'm not interested in self-preservation. I'm never going to give up until my pulse stops.
Your website, please, then, David.
The website is Halpin, H-A-L-P-I-N, surgeon. Up it comes. Search COVID 52, search community hospitals 52, search NHS, I think 53, search Palestine, I don't know, perhaps 60. So I speak about Palestine because Palestine is the hinge of our humanity. There's a genocide been taking place there for over 70 years, and the West, so-called West, Putin's West, has been silent utterly.
Okay, David Halpin, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Tony.